And can you feel it? I think you can. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, June 17, 2025. Do you realize, of course you do, that the month of June is more than half over? Where is time going? I was talking with my wife earlier, and we were talking about different things. And, you know, folks, I'll tell you this. We have when we're going through this life, realize that the windshield on a car is a heck of a lot bigger than the rear view mirror. So we look ahead at what's ahead and plan ahead, as opposed to being stuck in the past. We learn from the past, but we obviously focus on the future. In today's program, that's what we're going to be talking about. Really, what could be happening, what can be coming our way on the national, international level. I said yesterday, international level specifically. I've got two stellar, absolutely stellar people with me. Professionals, Sam Andrews, freedomtrain.net, and a gentleman that is making his debut on in this program, on this platform, Drew Sanford. He was a sergeant with the United States Army, Seaburn soldier, CBRN, which is chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear guy, recon and decon guy. Also served as hazmat level 3 soldier. So no slouch, and neither is, of course, Sam Andrews of freedomtrain.net. I thought of Sam yesterday and promoted the program yesterday. I thought of him too when we played the various video clips of the violence we've seen from, well, in yesterday's case, from the 60s right through the riots, St. Louis. I mean, my goodness, Los Angeles and everywhere. And yesterday's program, by the way, I just want to mention this. I received just a lot of good feedback from yesterday. And folks, if you don't mind, just share that program if you see fit, as well as tonight's program. Because I guarantee you tonight, this is in service for you, okay, for your information. And again, I can't think of really right now two better people to have on than Sam Andrews and Drew Sanford. So with that, welcome you to tonight. We are facing just a lot of news of the conflicts that are really a world at war, not necessarily World War III yet, but a world at war, and a lot of risks that are involved in that. A lot of risks here to us domestically, and you've lived through so much of that. And you've taken part in protecting others from that as well. So welcome, Sam Andrews. How are you, sir?
Doug, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for taking your valuable time out. I know, you know, you're busy really 20 hours of the day, and I appreciate your appearance here. Sam, I'm going to let you further introduce Drew Sanford. And let's have a conversation about things, a frank conversation about where we're at, what the threats are, what we have to be really looking out for. What's your intelligence telling you in terms of, you know, what intel are you getting? And let's address everything. So, but go ahead and introduce Drew Sanford, please.
Well, I've known Drew for a long time. He actually helped us in Ferguson. He was one of the guys on the rooftops, helped protecting minorities, single mothers with young babies, when the violence and the burning and the arson seems like a long time ago, 2014. But there was, I think, over 3,500 protesters Very similar to the LA riots. You know, the news likes to lump all the protesters together.
Oh, yeah.
And there's very disparate groups that protest. You have legitimate people exercising their First Amendment rights, and you have criminals, looters, and then you have paid operatives from Soros corporations that come in and stage bricks and stage bottles and gasoline and throw Molotovs and throw bricks and break up concrete and throw concrete blocks at police officers. I wish that the police would respond with rifle fire when people use lethal force on them. I think if they did, that garbage would stop very, very quickly.
I just want to point this out. Yesterday, and I didn't mean over talking, but yesterday I played some video clips. Back in 1967 and 68, you had the U.S. military deployed on our streets, and you had in Detroit specifically the 82nd and 101st deployed in Detroit, and there was live fire on looters and others who were out past a curfew. So we've seen that before, but we're not seeing it today. We haven't seen it since, I don't believe, we saw it at Kent State in 70, but since then, I haven't seen anything. But go ahead. I just wanted to mention that.
As a young boy, I remember the long, hot summer of 1967. I remember the Black Panther Party in the streets in California, lined up in rows and columns like a military unit with their rifles above their heads screaming, "Kill Whitey." And I remember how that scared the politicians, and that's what precipitated the 1968 Gun Control Act.
You're right on the money. Yep.
The new Black Panther Party, however, are Muslims. They're not the Black Panther Party of the 1960s. Completely different subset of people, different religion, different belief systems, completely different societal norms, and certainly much more violent and much more insidious to America and our way of life. But the similarities between the long hot summer and Ferguson and LA recently, pretty significant. You don't have protesters. You have four or five groups with various agendas. And it's much more complicated than the media typically portrays it for you. And I see enormous opportunity amidst this violence. And thank God we have a team working for our president that is willing to take risks. Because the opportunities are there, but you can't realize the benefits of the opportunities if you're not willing to take the risk. There's tremendous risk in going for regime change in Iran. There's tremendous risk in supporting Israel. There's tremendous risk in what we've done to try and defeat Hamas and Hezbollah. But you know what? I believe in my heart that God hates cowards. And I believe in my heart that the opportunities and the day will be won by the intelligent men willing to take risks. And so how lucky are we to have Trump in office and his team rather than Kamala and those clowns that were running the show for the last 4 years?
Oh, yes, yes. And now some people will bristle at the fact, well, they'll say, hey, wait a second. Not my circus, not my monkey. In relative to Israel and Iran, this is not our war. We're sick of wars, on and on. And I understand that point of view. I absolutely understand that.
Let's talk about how do you make an intelligent, discernible decision? How do you show discernment on whether or not you should get in a war or not? And see, because people have this mamby-pamby sort of amoeba-changing way of trying to think through those questions. And a lot of people forget that Ronald Reagan sold weapons to Iran and sold weapons to Saddam Hussein. And the strategy at the time was that if Iraq and Iran are fighting each other, they won't bother us. Well, the regime change in 79 in Iran, right? And in 1979, and then Iran quickly rose to, by a factor of 10, the largest state sponsor of terrorism and evil around the world. And right. and I'd like to give some background on that, because I don't think a lot of people understand that not all Muslims are alike. You have two major factions of Muslims. You know, we have 1,700 different Christian religions in America.
Yeah.
But the Muslim community is predominantly filled with Shia and Sunni. And radical Islam, the worst of radical Islam, comes from the Shia sect. And the Sunnis, by and large, are peaceful businessmen that want to prosper, sell their oil, be rich, and enjoy life. They don't want to be at war.
So you're talking the difference between Saudi Arabia and Iran, basically.
Pretty much so. Iran is over 95% Shia. Saudi Arabia is over 92% Sunni.
Right.
And so that's a fairly good example. But you have the United Arab Emirates, you have Qatar, you have these different societies, Muslim societies. And I'm not saying they're not exceptions, but the exception doesn't disprove the rule. The Sunni elements tend to be quite peaceful and quite good businessmen. And the Shia elements tend to be very radical and make up the bulk of the violent elements of radical Islam.
Okay.
And so once you understand that, then you understand how Trump saw the opportunity to go to Saudi Arabia, to go to the United Arab Emirates, to do the Abraham Accords with the countries that were willing at the time. And the fact is, Iran, through Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, have been killing Americans, thousands of Americans, and over 10,000 people around the world in the last 20 years. Iran's fingerprints are all over those murders. And it's right. because they pay these groups like Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis to kill.
Right.
They fight their proxy battles for them. And so the CIA, who was involved in deposing the Shah and all of these things historically, has actually been trying to foment regime change in Iran for the last 30 years. They want these mullahs out. And I believe that Trump and his team and Israel and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, all these other Sunni countries, they all agree that now is the time for regime change. I don't think there's going to be any peace accords or ceasefires. I think everybody has known from the beginning that the nuclear program has got to be completely dismantled and there has to be total surrender by Iran. And I believe you're going to see that come forward in the coming weeks. There will be no negotiating with these people. Iran, like China, has violated every agreement they've ever made with the rest of the world.
Right.
They cannot be trusted.
Okay. Nor should they be. I mean, obviously.
Exactly.
However, what threat, for example, is there to us, you and I, the yes. people listening, the people watching, because I watched or saw where Tucker Carlson said something about, well, you know, this is not our fight. A lot of people feel that way. And I understand that. I get that. So, people are sick of war, but go ahead.
So we're suffering in this country as a citizenry from the trauma of nation building for the last 50 years.
That's right.
And so that sentiment is out there, and it's out there in a lot of different places. And I understand the trauma. I understand the sentiment. I just don't agree with it. What people don't realize is that we've been saying Iran is trying to get nukes. Iran is close to getting nukes. We've been saying this for 15 years. But here's the reality of it. And I don't know if Eric got that slide I sent him, but now would be a good time to put it up. Iran was a week away from a nuclear warhead on a missile. And they were about 3 weeks away from 10 or 12 nuclear warheads. That's why Israel waited until day 61 and said, sorry, guys, got to go. It's time to move. And I don't know if that's displayed, but if you look at the progression, and what this is based on is the level of enrichment of their nuclear materials, because Iran had a significant amount of material enriched to 83%. Now, you only need 90% for a bomb. And that's just a few weeks, days, or a week or two from having uranium fully enriched to the point where it can be used effectively in a nuclear weapon. And so Israel was right. They had to move. And when is the last time in your lifetime another country did something with their fighter jets and their bombers and their intelligence agency to make America safer? This country owes a big debt to Israel for what they've done in the past week. And people don't realize it now, but when the truth comes out and people understand how close Iran actually was to putting nuclear warheads on their missiles, history will show that Israel helped protect the world with this move. This is no small thing.
But this is quite the divisive argument. I mean, you've got people like Charlie Kirk coming out and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we can't be doing this. We can't get involved in this. You've got rational, sensible people saying we shouldn't be involved. We should not have our fingers in this pie.
And my comment to that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
The two wisest things that anyone ever taught me about people was that when someone gives you their assessment of you, believe them. And when someone tells you who they are,
believe them. Right.
Right. And Iran has been saying for the better part of 40 years, death to Israel and death to America. And they have publicly pronounced they want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth and destroy America, wipe it off the globe. They have said this over and over again, not just one leader, but their whole team of leaders. And so when someone tells you they want to destroy you, and I understand the Christian view, I understand the passivity of turn the other cheek and that sort of thing. But I'm here to tell you, turn the other cheek was meant for your neighbor and your family members. It wasn't meant for a country saying they want to commit genocide against you and all of God's children.
Yeah, I don't think that applies here. I think it's there's a fatigue about foreign entanglements. There's been so much said by our founders, by people very, very smart, saying, you know, avoid foreign entanglements. However, I can see both sides of this issue. I'll just leave it there.
How different? I have a question for you, Doug. How different would the world be if we'd have dealt with Hitler in 1935 instead of 1945?
I've heard that argument. I understand it. And if you are attempting to apply it to Iran today, I fully understand it, given the propensity of that regime in Iran, the mullahs, to use a nuclear weapon. But, and when I say but, on the other hand, I suppose the alternative would be, well, is it up to us to be the policemen of the world?
No, it's not. But
go ahead.
We have to be honest with our threat assessments. Our threat assessments have to be accurate. Remember the, oh, Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. He has this, that, and the other.
Yeah, Colin Powell showing the violence, which was a friggin' lie. But go on.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, the American people have suffered through those lies. So there's some core mistrust of the government. And, you know, there weren't a lot of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There was some nuclear stuff found under the Tigris River, but it was Russian. And it quietly got pushed back to Russia. I don't know how many Americans are aware of that, but that's the truth. Okay, there were some chemical munitions. There were some things, but it was nowhere near what it had been made out to be by the Bush intelligence agencies.
Okay.
Okay, it was very dishonest. And it was very deceptive and problematic because, you know, when you cry wolf, how many times, like you said, people become weary, you know, and then when you're not crying wolf, maybe nobody moves, nobody reacts, nobody deals with the threat. But I'll remind everybody that Adolf Hitler did not have a nuclear weapon. Adolf Hitler was not near the threat to this world that Iran was. And he didn't have the powerful weapons that Iran was developing. AQ Khan from Pakistan has been helping their nuclear scientists. And by the way, the media calls the Iran people that were killed nuclear scientists. No, they're not. They're nuclear weapons engineers. They had one job, to get Iran a nuclear weapon as quickly as possible. Thank God we wiped them off the face of this earth.
When you say we, define we, because the story out there is Israel did this.
Well,
not we, they.
Israel did this. The bulk of the direct action. The Mossad was absolutely magnificent. But don't think for 1 minute that Saudi Arabia wasn't involved, that intelligence from other Sunni Muslim sources were not involved, and that the CIA was not involved, and that British MI5 and 6 were not involved. Don't think for a second that the whole world, other than Russia and China, didn't want to help disarm Iran, because the whole world knows the catastrophe that would unload if Iran got a nuclear weapon. Now, some are not publicly saying that. Of course, the Muslims are by their culture, supposed to stick together, even if the Shia, who want to kill Sunni Muslims, the Sunnis are supposed to say, oh, you invaded Iran's sovereignty, right? That's the proper thing to do if you're a Muslim, is to side with the Muslims. But behind closed doors, how can we help? What can we do? We have information that will help. And how brilliant was the Mossad going in and building factories inside Iran, drone factories, and developing assets, Iranian citizens, that would map the movements of the chief officers of the Air Force and the Army. I mean, they wiped out a bunch of them in the first 30 minutes of this thing. Absolutely magnificent planning and execution.
Okay. And I get all of that. What is the risk now? And I'm cognizant of the fact that we have Drew in with us as we speak. But
he can speak to the number one risk.
Okay.
So what happens if you can't get to 90% enrichment and put a bomb on a ballistic missile and launch it at your manage? What's your next best option? And this is the real risk that we're taking right now, is that Iran will smuggle some of that 80% enriched material out and create a dirty bomb and sneak it into our cities. Now, can you imagine if Biden was still president, our borders were open, and Israel goes into Iran? There'd be dirty bombs blowing up all over the United States.
Who's to say that we don't have that material already in this country because of that 4-year morass? I truly believe that there are materials of that type here in this country. But my question, of course, to everyone I ask, or to everyone with knowledge of the subject, why hasn't anyone used them yet? That's a question I've got, but continue.
So I think, you know, you're getting probably past my level of expertise. I have intel. I know that the Russians had 52 quarter megaton briefcase nuclear devices and 26 half megaton nuclear devices that disappeared when the Soviet Union was broken up. Our SEAL teams have been looking for those doggone things for the better part of 2.5 decades, and we haven't found a single one.
How can you not find that? Don't they have to have a power source? Don't they give off
the radioactivity, right? But the person who took them knew how to shield them. from our satellite technology. And we have satellite technology that can track a briefcase moving on the surface of the earth in a pickup truck or a car. But what we can't do is track them if they're properly shielded. Okay, we don't have the technology to do that because there's not a strong enough radioactive signal for satellites to pick it up. So we don't just have the Soviet briefcase nuke threat with open borders. We have sleeper cells from Iran and China and other countries here in the United States, and we have the potential for smuggling radioactive material. And now, a lot of people don't realize this, but we have sensors all over our highways, everything. So if they try to move something and it isn't shielded very carefully, it's going to set off a lot of alarms if it's being driven around the United States. And I think you got to go to Drew and ask, you know, what about the dirty bomb threat? What about nuclear material being detonated with a regular explosive and contaminating the atmosphere, contaminating other things? And, you know, this is the sort of thing that it's a good thing you have him on tonight, because he can sort of speak to what Americans can do if these threats materialize.
Well, I have to say this to the people watching and listening. We have Drew Sanford again. He was a sergeant in the U.S. Army. He was a soldier recon and decon in the Seaburn unit, the chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear. He served as a hazmat level 3 soldier, so he knows that of which he speaks. And it's because of you, Sam, that Drew is joining us, and I'm very, very pleased. I want to thank you, and of course I want to thank Drew for his gracious gift of time. So let's bring him on, and what I'd like you to do, Sam, is ask him the pertinent questions, because from your perspective, and I'll interject at different times, but I want to hear this discussion, because I want to know what our legitimate threat, what the legitimate threat is right now to us here in the U.S., the continental United States, first and foremost. Because, again, a lot of people voted for President Trump because he said, you know what, no more wars, and it's America first. And a lot of people, I'm just going to say, feel betrayed just by the talk of him supporting any kind of action, especially supporting Israel, you know. But I'll leave that to you. I want to hear his answers. I want to hear what the threat is currently. But let's bring him on. Drew Sanford. Again, a sergeant in the U.S. Army, a Seaburn soldier, and a hazmat level 3 soldier. So he knows about these kind of threats. Sam, I'm going to kick it to you. You guys have a discussion. We'll all have a discussion. And there's Drew. Welcome, Drew, to the Hagmann Report.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good evening.
Good evening. So I think what's on a lot of Americans' mind right now is, what is Trump doing getting us involved in these entanglements with Iran and Israel? But outside of the political ramifications, if you could just maybe give the listeners sort of some background information on what type of radiation you're dealing with in a radiological or nuclear event, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about what can the average person do in suburban America or rural or in the cities here if they have an event near them. I know from our WMD command post exercises that we did through Command Operations Center, I know that the wind can have an effect on who gets contaminated, you know, once the air and dust particles get charged with radiological energy or, you know, some type of REMS. And I know there's certain types of radiation. Maybe you could get into that a little bit and kind of give us some background so the listeners kind of understand what we're up against if there's an event here in the U.S.
Yeah, sure. So the three types of radiation you're looking at, you've got gamma radiation, which is going to be your initial radiation when the explosion happens. You know, when you see the people who got vaporized from the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombs, that's the gamma radiation that totally vaporized. When you talk about fallout, you're talking about alpha and beta radiation. That's the stuff that you can ingest or you can absorb through your skin. And you can get real sick radiation poisoning that way.
Gotcha. And so if I describe sort of dynamically what happens, someone airbursts a nuclear device, let's say it is delivered with a missile system and it is a nuclear bomb. Let's talk about that before we talk about the dirty bombs. They're probably going to airburst this thing because it'll damage more people. It'll contaminate a larger area. So there's two types of nukes. There's a type that are designed to blow up on the ground, and then there's a type that are designed to airburst. So when a bomb airbursts, you get some electromagnetic force at a tremendous level. You get this EMP wave and you get the gamma radiation. And so anybody above ground, when an airburst occurs, and they're, say, within 10, 15, tell us how many miles, they're pretty much toast at that point, are they not, if they're above ground out in the open?
Certainly, and there's a big variation in the size of nuclear weapons. The largest ever tested was by the Russians. You're talking a 50-megaton nuclear bomb at that point that was a air detonation, and you're looking at about 100-mile diameter of damage, or I'm sorry, radius. So you've got 100 miles in each direction from the explosion point.
Oh, on an airburst, it will instantly contaminate 100-mile radius, so 200-mile circle.
Really quickly, you're talking an instant kind of death radius of about 20 miles, so 40 total miles around the detonation site. Just in comparison, if you want to compare it to the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs, those were in kilotons. It takes 1,000 kilotons to make 1 megaton. So the Russian bomb, 50 megatons. Our bombs were 15 and 25 kilotons, just to kind of give you an idea of the difference between the size of those nukes.
So they were the largest nuke we detonated in Japan was 1/2,000th the size of Russian's 50 megaton nuke.
Correct.
Holy smokes, that's a big difference. And how many people did the Nagasaki? Was it 80,000?
I'm not sure on the number. I know, just to give you an idea, when I talked about that 20-mile radius of like an initial. You just die instantly. The Nagasaki was 0.5 mile, just to give you a comparison of the size of the immediate danger area.
Gotcha. And so the immediate danger area is pressure wave, gamma radiation, you're kind of toast if you're out in the open. And then what happens days afterwards? Kind of give us a feel on an airburst situation. What's going on?
Sure. So the gamma rays dissipate pretty quickly. You can start moving if you're well protected within 2 or 3 days without serious repercussions, as long as you have the right equipment. So you'll want a full body suit. You want to be covered head to toe. You want a mask that can trap and filter out fallout, the gamma or the beta and alpha radiation. And they go through filters pretty quick. So if you're in an active environment, you want to make sure you have multiple handy so you can change them out every couple hours, so that you're constantly breathing good air.
Clean air. Now, when I'm in a dirty environment with a gas mask, say a fire, smoke, particulate, the filters, I've had them clog in 35 to 45 minutes if I'm really running or moving or working hard. In a CBRN, in a radiological nuclear environment with a CBRN rated filter on your gas mask, does the filter actually fill up with radioactive particles in an hour or two? Is that possible if you're working real hard or breathing hard?
It certainly is possible, yes.
Wow. And so that begs the question, how many people that have gas masks, it seems like every American should have one, and they should have probably at least 3 or 4 CBRN rated filters. Does that make sense, or would you recommend something different?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And I guess the next thing you would need once you get the equipment is the skill to do a hot filter change. Like, and I'll give a scenario. Let's say that, so I live in Lebanon. We've got Whiteman Air Force Base where the B-2s are staged not 95 miles as the crow flies from my house. They're almost due north. If Whiteman was attacked, it's a strategic target for our enemies with a nuke. And let's say it hit a little bit north of Whiteman. It was off a mile or two, and we probably would have a chance to get out of Lebanon. And the wind is blowing in the summertime from south to north or from southwest to northeast where I live. But in the wintertime, it's coming sometimes straight from the north. So if we had a big air burst over Whiteman, I would have very little time to get in my truck, put my gas mask on, put my filter on, and start driving away from the contaminated zone, particularly if the wind is blowing that stuff that's charged on top of my geographical area. And then I'm thinking, okay, I'm in my truck and I'm trying to drive out of a zone that may be hot or warm very, very soon. I'm probably going to get enveloped by that radiation before I get completely out of the zone. And so I've got to know how to change filters. With being in an area that might be warm or hot with contaminated material. And so, you know, we've talked about this before. To do a hot filter change, you basically have to take a deep breath of filtered air before your first filter clogs, because it gets hard to breathe when they start to shut down. But you've got to get a full lung of air, and then you've got to unscrew that filter. And as you're unscrewing it, you've got to have positive pressure in your mask and be able to get that new filter on tight and sealed up before you run out of air. Is that the proper way to frame a hot filter change?
That is correct, yeah.
And so if you were to, you're the expert, if you were to explain a hot filter change, give people an idea of what the sequence is like when you're in a contaminated area. What are you actually thinking? What's going through your head? And what do you do to sort of pre-stage things before you make that move with the filters? I want people to hear it from an expert.
And before you answer that question, let me just say this. 95, 90, at least 95% of Americans believed that at one point that masks, you know, the surgical masks made a difference in terms of COVID. So you're talking to a population where maybe 5% or less really understand what you're talking about. So talk slow. I guess. I don't know what to, but go ahead, sir.
Sure. I have a little experience in that as well, my wife being an anesthesiologist. So I got to see the medical side of everything going on. Their masks do very well. You need a very particular kind of mask that can filter out certain kinds of particles. Not talking about COVID, talking about radiation again. You need a HEPA mask, which stands for high efficiency particulate air. So you need a HEPA filter. There are different variations, different quality, different types of quality HEPA filters out there. There's a good site, mirasafety.com, that you can actually, they sell good products. They got the whole bodysuit. They've got the mask with all the filters you need. I suggest taking a look at that site if this is a concern of yours. And they have all the gear you can possibly want for this kind of scenario. Now,
should it be a concern of ours? Because before we go down this road, I mean, and Sam, you can opine on this as well. Are we looking at a nuclear threat environment here in the United States or even anywhere in the West at this moment in time?
Well, I think it depends on if the Mossad's intel is 100% accurate. We probably won't get a nuke on an ICBM lobbed into the continental U.S. But even if their intel is 100% correct, the threat of a dirty bomb where they take enriched material that wasn't quite weapons grade and they take standard explosives, You could use Simtex, C4, dynamite, all these different, there's all kinds of high order, low order explosive materials that could disperse radiation, even though it was only, let's say, 83 to 85% enriched. It's a very crude weapon that takes no knowledge, no technology hardly at all to make. And if that stuff got smuggled into the U.S., we're going to have some big problems. And that threat is real, whether the Mossad's intelligence is 100% or 90% or 80%.
Okay.
And so that's my opinion. That's my threat assessment on is it possible? It absolutely is, particularly 4 years of open border under Biden. You can't discount it. I don't see how, I don't see how wise men would.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we were on the same page with that. So, Drew, you mentioned a website. If you can give that website out again or spell it, because I didn't quite get that.
Absolutely. MiraSafety.com. That's M as in mother, I-R-A, safety.com.
Okay. All right, thanks. And there it is, folks, on your screen. If you're watching this in real time or at the archive or on the archive, there it is. And if you are in the market for protective devices or things, equipment to protect you from radioactive fallout, radiation, whatever the situation might be, that's the website to go. MiraSafety.com. Again, you're looking at the landing page on your screen. Drew, I interrupted you with my question. Continue, please, with what you were saying.
Sure. To protect yourself against gamma radiation, you need something that's very solid. You're talking steel, earth, lead, concrete, those kind of materials. The more you have of that between yourself and the radiation, the more protected you're going to be. To give you an idea, if you're 40, 50 miles out from that 50 megaton bomb we were talking about, you're going to want 8 to 10 feet of earth between yourself and that radiation. That's going to give you solid protection. It's not going to get all of it, but enough to where it's not going to give you any serious problems immediately. You're going to have time to get to your safe spot, to get to your supplies, get your suit on, get your mask on, get your filters, get everything you need. Keep in mind, this radiation will contaminate food and water too. You don't, if you're in the process of getting to a safe area, don't just think that you can drink water and eat food that's been contaminated. This fallout will poison you very badly. There are ways to decontaminate it. Reverse osmosis is great. It'll take out 99% of the radiation contaminants out of your water. Food, I would probably leave it. The best thing you can do is to keep a good supply of non-perishable food in a safe environment. Keep it in your basement. Keep it in a thick, you know, you can build a steel room in your basement. So you've got the concrete, you've got earth, and then you've got steel to also, you know, kind of shield out that radiation initially, if you have a basement. I know not everybody has a basement or lives in an area that basements are available, but if they are, that's a good option for you.
Okay. So when you say steel, so if I'm in my basement, I know that above me would be the first floor of my house, ground level. The steel room, doesn't that require steel above you as well? I mean, in addition to the earth and whatever on the sides surrounding the foundation. I mean,
yes, it does. When I say make a steel room, you know, you've already got your basement made, correct? You've got your concrete walls around you, your concrete base. Above you, you probably have a steel beam or two, and then you have wooden joists and wooden boards that are above you. But you can build a steel room within a room, right? Like a small safe house. Like, so if you're aware of the detonation, you know, get down to that steel room. That's where you should be keeping your, you know, water, some non-perishable food, keep your equipment there. And also a kit to decontaminate yourself. You know, keep some water aside that you plan on using to rinse yourself off with some soap. And that's a good way to get the contamination off your skin before you get into your suit and get into your gear, if you came from a dirty environment.
What about, when I think about this, I'm thinking about areas of greater concern. Obviously, Washington, D.C., if you're listening to this and you're in Washington, D.C., to me, that would be a prime target. Do you have any comments on what cities would be more desirable to target by an enemy than others? I mean, aside from the obvious.
Absolutely. DC is obviously a very high priority because of all the political movement there, a large population. New York obviously is going to be a very big target. Cities like Chicago, LA, San Francisco, anything that's super high population. Also, being more toward the coast, I think you're a little more vulnerable to a missile attack. It's going to be a lot harder to, let's say, lob a missile into Dallas or St. Louis, because it's more in the heart of the country. There's more time for a defense to be mounted against it, shot down, things of that nature. Dirty bombs, they can happen anywhere. Yeah, if they're in the country, it's just a matter of transportation and getting it where they want it to go. But you're looking, the further you can be out from a very heavily populated city, the safer you're going to be.
Makes sense. Yeah. Okay. All right. And so it, on balance, are you professionally and personally, what would you be more concerned with as a viable threat today? A dirty bomb or an air blast by a hostile nation here domestically in the U.S.?
That's a hard question. If it's going to be an air ballistic, obviously we're going to know who sent it, right? We're going to be able to see where it came from.
Right.
We'll be able to immediately retaliate. So I think it's maybe a little more of a hesitation for a ballistic, an air type bomb to be sent. A dirty bomb, if it was coming from Iran, I would say a dirty bomb might be more likely. They don't have the capability to send an air ballistic missile, a nuke through the air and hit the United States. They don't have that capability right now. Like Sam said, it'll be a dirty bomb. It'll be in the country and they'll probably do a bunch at once. It probably won't just be one. They'll want to get everything they have in position and do it all at one time before we have a chance to defend or retaliate.
Man, I got to say, gentlemen, that would really suck. Okay, to have that level of destruction and death here in the U.S. I think you're absolutely right, though. I think we have to come to grips with the fact that, hey, depopulation is certainly a goal that would accomplish a good piece of that depopulation, I suspect. And if you're alive and sick, I think who said you'll envy the dead? I'm just saying. So, okay, a hard topic to discuss, but necessary nonetheless. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I think when you want to do threat assessment, you have to be specific. And so when you ask the question ICBM or dirty bomb, if who's launching the attack, if it's Russia or China or Pakistan, there's a probability it could be an ICBM. If it's Iran or the Houthis or Hamas with sleeper cells in the U.S., they don't have the logistical support to do the missile thing. And I think that the dirty bomb is 100% more likely with certain groups. So knowing who your enemy is a big deal. And knowing who is threatening you. And that's why I say this country, Iran, that has been saying death to America since 1979, we haven't taken them at their word. And that is a foolish, foolish thing to do. Because, a lot of people don't know this, but Iran has purchased submarines from Russia.
Right.
They have Russian subs. And see, a lot of people don't know this, but Iran's technical capability with drones exceeded the technology of the Russian drones. Iran was selling drones to Russia for the conflict that Russia's in right now. And see, people don't know these things. You know, Iran was one of the countries that shot down one of our drones and reverse engineered it. And so they leapfrog Russia in that respect. And so you have the combination potentially of a drone carrying a dirty bomb. There's all kinds of possibilities that could play out. And we have, like, I think Israel is a very, very good case study because Iran has been launching missiles at Israel for the last 4 days. And about 90% of those missiles have been shot down by Saudi Arabia, by the United Arab Emirates, by U.S. Navy assets, by U.S. Army and Air Force assets, by the Iron Dome and the systems that we sold Israel. But we still don't get them all. We get 9 out of 10. Now, and the reason why we don't get them all is because Iran is very familiar with the technology we use to defend Israel. And so they understand that if they flood a narrow corridor with a whole bunch of missiles in a very short period of time, they use a flooding technique to overwhelm the air defense systems and a few of them get through. And that's what's been going on. And so you could be in a very asymmetrical situation with a country like Iran, and they're still going to hit you. It's kind of like a knife fight. Everybody's going to get cut. The question is, who's going to bleed out first? Now, if we go to war with Iran, we will wipe them out. They will bleed out first, but that doesn't mean we won't get cut.
Well, all right.
How many people have died in Israel from just the 5 to 10% of those missiles that have gotten through the defenses? I think it's over 100 now. Now, that pales in comparison to 9/11, but if one of those 100 people is your loved one, that's a tragedy.
Yeah, statistics at that point don't really matter when it's you or a loved one. I get that. So, okay. Between the two of you, your threat assessment today for something to happen with respect to a nuclear event here in the U.S. Obviously, you feel stronger that it could happen today. You feel stronger that the possibility is greater today than it was a year ago, 5 years ago, whatever. I'm hearing that. Am I correct in that?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Okay.
Well, we've just helped Israel attack the greatest sponsor of terrorism on planet Earth. The same country that has identified us as the big Satan, the great Satan, and Israel as the little Satan, and that has also planned to assassinate our president, our secretary of state, our secretary of defense. They have sent teams over here to assassinate our officials. And so don't think for a minute that they won't retaliate. And I got to tell you, these people that say don't get involved with Iran, they are opening the door, the time window of exposure of risk. They're expanding it dramatically. What we need to do is to go into Iran and finish the job in a matter of 2 days and mitigate the chance that they want to be motivated to try and retaliate. If you want to protect Americans, what Trump needs to do is go in there and finish them. You know how when two kids fight in school and the teacher grabs them and pulls them apart and says, you know, violence isn't the answer. Violence is never the answer. In my experience in history, the only way you solve problems that involve direct evil, that people that want to murder children of God, The only thing that ever solves that kind of problem permanently is ruthless, immediate, overwhelming violence.
I look, I agree with that. However, you're talking to a here's my take from looking at this as objectively as I can. You're talking to a population of Americans who just witnessed 20 years of a bullshit war in Afghanistan. Okay, I mean, really, why? What the hell were we doing in Afghanistan? What the hell were we doing in Iraq? What the hell did we do to Libya with respect? Okay, and Americans are sitting back and saying, you know what? All this is doing is feeding this endless war machine, feeding the coffers of the weapons makers and all of this. So it's against that backdrop, at least from my perspective and based on what I see, that has people really at each other's throats. I mean, conservatives at each other's throats saying, no, we can't get involved. But what I hear you saying is, okay, this is different. But again, how many times have we heard that? But this is different, is what you're saying. I think the two of you, right, Drew and Sam, I mean, because of the nuclear side of things.
It is definitely different. You look at Afghanistan and Iraq, they were never a real threat to us. Iran has been a real threat to us. They're a top five threat to the United States, right there along with China, North Korea, Russia. They are a major threat, and they've been on the brink of nuclear capabilities for a while now. I don't know about the specifics, but I know when we talk about threats, especially in terms of my job, they have always been one of the top names to come up.
Wow. Okay. I think we've known that, I just have another question too. I do suspect that the CIA had a lot of interaction with Mossad in this latest operation against Iran. Question. Didn't the CIA have a hand in toppling the Shah back in 79 that ushered in essentially the current regime or the current ideological driven regime of Iran today?
That is absolutely true, Doug.
Okay, so what the hell is my question? Again, what sense does that make? So we get rid of the CIA, gets rid of the Shah, which not the greatest of guys, but if you look at pictures from Iran back in 77, 78, westernized. Now the CIA goes in and assists in the toppling of him. The Ayatollah comes in. Remember the hostages, 444 days, 52 people. What a cluster that was. Okay. Desert One. Remember that? Carter's. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're doing this all over again. Do we expect different results? Just asking. Anybody, go either one. Go.
Okay, I'll answer that question. Absolutely. And I'll give you an example of why we need to go in there in a matter of 2 to 3 days, finish the job.
All right. Okay. I got to hear this.
I'll give you an example. What we wanted in Iran were the people to rise up and establish a republic and yes, topple the mullahs. Okay. Now, we have previous experience with Muslim nations attempting the same thing. Iraq, and I want to talk about Desert Storm for a second, okay? Because in Desert Storm, we had a general over there named General Norman Schwarzkopf.
Storm and Norman, yep.
Storm and Norman. And he worked for George W. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, Storm and Norman, Norman Schwarzkopf, I mean, he worked for George Bush. I think Desert Storm was what, around 1993? So it was W's dad. So we had some players. We had Colin Powell as the Joint Chief, and we had Norman as the operating general. He was the commander of Desert Storm. And we went in and we pushed Saddam's forces out of the country they had invaded. And Schwarzkopf said, we need to go get Saddam and his regime. We need to topple their regime or we're going to be back here in 10 years or less. Now, Colin Powell, Secretary of Defense at the time, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the developer of the Powell Doctrine, brilliant doctrine, Colin Powell argued with against Schwarzkopf and said, oh, no, we can't do that. We will lose our relationships with the other Muslim nations. This will cause big problems internationally. And no, we won't be back. Schwarzkopf is wrong about that. He's like every other commanding general that wants to go and destroy the enemy. And that's not wise.
Okay.
Now, who was right? We were right back there. Was it 10 years or was it 12 years? I mean, Schwarzkopf wasn't far off. He wasn't 10% off, I don't think.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20, but I think back then, and Drew, military, recent military experience, retired at the level you did. I mean, weigh in on this because I'd like to hear what you've got to say. Because your boots on the ground. Well, go ahead. Weigh in on sure. That.
You know, honestly, I don't have a lot of good information about Iraq. You know, I was in Qatar. I didn't join the army until 2009. I never participated in anything going on in Iraq. I get some hearsay here and there. You know, I hear stuff, but it's not anything that I would put myself behind.
Okay. So you're more of your work, just to be clear for the listening and viewing audience, your work is mitigation of the nuclear threats and the safety of people in a nuclear situation, a nuclear biological situation. Is that summarized?
Sure. No? To give you a brief overview, you know, we were our stateside mission, our FEMA mission was to mass decontaminate a large number of people very quickly. Our Army mission, we had recon, decon, and detection. So our recon, we go out, we have vehicles, we have sniffers, we can detect chemicals and biological weapons in the air. We have radiological meters that will detect radiation. All this equipment that we use to detect and then also decon ourselves. We have decon mission in the Army as well. So decon civilian, decon Army, and recon Army, along with all the detection, is basically what we were in charge of.
Okay. Wow. Big job, I've got to say. Dangerous one, it sounds, and I suspect it would be, but certainly a big job. Okay.
Well, one you never want to have to use.
Yeah.
Ask this old sniper if he'd rather go sit in a hide and wait for a target of opportunity to pop out, or whether he'd like to drive into a hot zone with a vehicle equipped with sensing equipment. Oh, I would rather work as a sniper 365 days a year and twice on Sundays than do that job. Driving into 100%. a radiation contaminated zone in a vehicle to measure the level of contamination. I mean, these people are heroes.
Yeah, I agree. And Drew, you got some big gonads there, I've got to say, to be playing with that stuff, or not playing with it, but dealing with it. So okay. Very interesting. I have a question because somebody had dropped this in my lap. I don't know how true this is, or I don't know anything about this, but I have a question. Apparently there has been sightings or information where Chinese jumbo jets have been flying into Iran. Either one of you have any information on that?
I don't believe it, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
Unless it happened on Friday night last week, I don't believe it. But I do know this. I know that Iran purchased materials and parts for over 800 ballistic missiles from China. So if a Chinese plane came in and dropped that stuff off, that's feasible. But I'll tell you, since very early in this conflict, Israel has owned the skies over Iran. And I don't see Israel's fighter pilots allowing 747s full of weapons and equipment to be flown into Iran from China in the last 3.5 days. I don't think that's even feasible.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Again, I don't have any information either way. It was a question, and I don't know the dates or the date or the time frame. So, but it was a question. So that's good. All right. So
I can tell you this though, Doug. Israeli pilots have reported that they have been approaching Air Force bases in Iran and seen fighter jets taking off and running east at afterburner. So
wait. Huh?
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Like getting out of town before they blow my plane up.
Okay. All right. That I wanted to make sure I had that purposeful. Okay. I get it now. Okay. Wow. All right. So why at this point? Why, Sam? Why did you say that the U.S. should go in and finish the job in a couple of days? Why, for example, can't Israel do it? Saudi Arabia, other countries?
I'll tell you why. So Iran presents unique logistical challenges because they have a number, not just Fordow, which they talk about on the news all the time, but they have a number of underground enrichment facilities. And for Israel to go in, they would have to fight their way in to these facilities through booby traps, probably through armed conflict, and blow these enrichment facilities up, get in underground. And we have technology. We like to call it the MOP, the mother of all penetrators. The technical name for it is massive ordnance penetrator. It's a 30,000-pound bomb that is so long, it will only fit in a B-2 bay diagonally. It has 5-inch thick nose made of 9300 series steel hardened. That's the same steel we use on the edge of snowplow blades.
Okay.
And has a very sophisticated computer and delay system. And they're saying on the news that a MOP weapon can penetrate to 200 feet. That's not accurate. I'll just tell you point blank. The distance that it can penetrate is classified. We have a grid of about 32 different delay structures, depending on the type of soil and the type of structure we want to penetrate to. But we have the ability to go way deeper than that because our MOPs are so accurate, we can peck in the same hole.
Interesting.
Israel has no bomber capable of dropping a MOP. We can end this thing and completely destroy Iran's nuclear program in about 30 sorties with MOPs. We can get all of their hardened underground structures. Could Israel take the heroic route and send their special forces in to try and, but at great risk to life and at great risk, I think the MOP is a better choice because I think with the MOP, you'll get less radiation leak. And I think Trump knows that. I don't think the Trump administration is talking about that. But when the MOP penetrates deeply, soil collapses into the hole as this thing's going deep underground. And then it blows up, and you've got a really good chance of trapping the radiation. if you send guys in there, the guys could be irradiated. I mean, it's just it's technically more problematic and more risky to send special forces in there. Could they do it? Of course they could. At what risk? At what level of support, air and otherwise? And timing wise, it would be extremely difficult. So I would use the mop, clean house in less than 2 days, and be done with it. And then lay siege to Iran and say, when you're ready for regime change and the people are ready to stand up and be and establish a peaceful government, then we'll stop. But you know, Trump has said unequivocally, complete surrender is the only thing he will accept. Now, is that a negotiating tactic? I have no way of knowing. But that's what he said. He started with, you got 60 days to make a deal. Then he came in with, 60 days is over. Now look what happened.
Right.
And then he came in with, I told you to make a deal. You should have made a deal. Right? And now he's at, they're lobbing ballistic missiles into civilian areas of Israel, and I don't feel like making a deal. Complete surrender.
Okay, and I want to bring one thing up, and I want to get Drew involved here too, because again, he's been very gracious to take time out of his busy schedule. The man is extremely knowledgeable. By the way, Drew, I should ask you this before I state what I was going to state next. Are you on any social media? Do you have any websites? Do you plug whatever you have if you'd like to do that, or if you would rather not do that? I certainly understand.
I do appreciate that, but no, I try and keep my footprint very minimal.
Doing what you do, I suppose I would feel the same way. All right. What I was going to say is this. On June 3rd, just a couple of weeks ago, episode 4893, we had Shaheen Gobadi on. Now, he is the face behind the organized resistance in Iran. Really, right now, only 4% of the Iranian people support the current regime. And one of the biggest stories out there about Iran is being censored everywhere, that Iran is in fact on the precipice of a big change. The mullahs are on their last leg, or are they? So when Shaheen Gobadi was on, and I did interview him, he's in Paris, that's where he's based, but the organization's pretty interesting. Again, this is from January 3rd. I guess my question would be to both of you at this particular point, a two-part question. Number one, have we, or has Israel, with our help, with Western help, to what extent has their nuclear capabilities been impacted? I mean, are they completely out of business in terms of, you know, lobbing a nuke? Or are they just kind of sort of, you know, they're kind of out of business, but still in business? How much was destroyed, and what capabilities do they have left? That's the first part. And the second part of the question is, I'll just stop there. Either one, go ahead.
The best intel we have at the time is that 40% of their ballistic missiles have been destroyed. That leaves 60%. That means that we're going to continue to see missiles lobbed into Israel and possibly at American bases in the region. 60% still remain. And that's why I believe that we're going to have two aircraft carriers in the area. I know the Nimitz is headed there. It'll be there in 3 days. So, and I believe,
what's your feeling on that? I mean, that was going to be mothballed, and they're sending that out. I've heard people say, wow, gee, you know, if we're going to lose a ship, let's lose that one. We've been here in this situation before, haven't we, in history? So I'm kind of curious as to your thoughts on that.
Well, Rumsfeld, right after 9/11, was running around Capitol Hill. I was up there working on three projects at the Pentagon, and Rumsfeld was trying to cut three carrier battle groups from our Navy.
Right.
Okay. So there had been a lot of Republicans that wanted to get rid of the Marine Corps and cut two or three carrier battle groups out of our Navy. And so this has been going on a long time. But Trump's taken the opposite tack. He's increased the military's budget from $700 billion to like $1.1, $1.2 trillion. I don't know what the Senate and the House are ultimately going to agree on. But the fact is that the job is not done in Iran, and we need to finish the job. And see, we've been fighting wars politically. We haven't been fighting them to win them. I have no problem with an air campaign that utterly destroys Iran's nuclear capability and brings them to regime change. We don't have to put boots on the ground. Now, if Israel wants to do that, they're welcome to. But we don't have to send our young men over there. We can use our mops. We can peck in a hole and go as deep as they can build. And we need to do that, and we need to do it quickly.
All right.
And the mullahs are hiding. You know, the chief of the army, I want to say the strategic equivalent of our chairman of joint chiefs, was killed in the first 5 minutes of this conflict.
And that wasn't his replacement?
His replacement was killed 3 days later.
Right, right.
These guys are hiding now. They're not running Iran. They're running from Iran. And I've heard some intel that a number of them have headed over the border. They're headed into Russia. They're headed to Russia. So I suspect that the people will rise up if we keep the pressure on. And it will be a great thing to finish the job and get real regime change. And normally I am not for regime change. But in this case, when someone overtly claims they're going to wipe your country off the face of the earth and they're going to kill all the Jews, when the leadership says that, not just the premier, the supreme leader, but the heads of the army and the navy and the air force of Iran say that,
right,
and people are chanting it in the street by the tens of thousands, it's time to call a spade a spade. It's time to deal with the threat and finish it. And the only way you make the threat go away is to finish it. And I, you know what Genghis Khan used to do, right? He used to have his men encircle the enemy and just kill and close in until the last man was executed. Yeah. And anyone who supports the mullahs, that's exactly what we need to do. They don't want to just kill Christians. They don't want to just kill Jews. They want to kill Sunni Muslims. We've got the world's support to end these clowns. I think 79, what is that, 21 plus 20, 46 years of terrorism around the world. Enough is enough.
Okay. And now I got to have a question for the both of you. Drew, feel free to opine on this. Again, I know what your specialty is, but I'm kind of interested because of your recency with the military. When I look at this situation with Iran, and of course, the fatigue our country has for foreign wars, the Afghan pullout, where we left all of this equipment. It was worse than, you know, the Saigon moment there. But we left all sorts of equipment in Afghanistan. The most important air base, Bagram Air Force Base, we handed over essentially to the Chinese. Again, this question, Drew and Sam, either one. What role did that event play in the events we're seeing happen today, right now, if any? Your thoughts. Jump in, guys.
You know, I don't think our pullout of Afghanistan had much to do with what's going on in Iran currently.
Okay.
What's going on in Iran currently has been going on for a long time. You know, I think we should have probably ended this at least 10 to 15 years ago under Obama's presidency.
Okay, what makes you say that? I've heard that before because
Obama wanted to. I'll just tell you, Obama wanted to go after Iran. but his party stopped him. When we were testing the mop out west in different types of soil, and we were setting the fuse delays based on the test data, Obama was calling every day. Every morning he was calling, is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? This went on for weeks. Obama wanted the mop to go after Iran.
Who the hell stopped them?
His party. His party stopped him. He actually wanted to deal with that threat. But the politics of his own party stopped him. And this is a true story. I'm not kidding about this. This is not something made up. This is not projected. Obama was calling the test site of the MOP every morning saying, are we there yet? And it was specifically in reference to going after Iran.
Yeah, there were certainly a lot of factors in that. There is, if you go back and look at the before the presidential race of Trump and Obama, Trump would constantly bring up the fact, oh, Obama's going to try and get a third term because he's going to go into Iran and start a war. And so there was a lot of fear mongering started by Trump that I think backed off Obama a little bit. So there's a few things that backed him off of that for sure.
And if you remember, in the run-up to his presidency, as well as afterwards, Obama has some really interesting connections with Pakistan. Am I wrong about that?
No, Obama was way kind to Pakistan and sent them a whole lot of money. And I can tell you this, though, the pullout in Afghanistan, I agree with Drew 100%. It didn't really affect the Iran situation. That's been going on since the 1980s. But the pullout in Afghanistan and the way it was done by Biden absolutely emboldened Russia to attack Ukraine and absolutely emboldened Iran to use these proxies against Israel. So even though it didn't affect the threat of Iran to America, it's certainly, I don't believe we would have had the Russia Crimea, the Russia Ukraine incidents had Obama done his job with Iran and had Biden not had such a disastrous display of weakness in the way he pulled out of Afghanistan.
All right. Wow. Okay. So what, if I can ask again, both of you, jump in and answer. What do you see now, given the situation where we're at today with, missiles are going back and forth. It almost seems like a war at this point of attrition, between Iran and Israel. So, tossing this out to both of you, what do you see taking place over the next several days, several weeks, throughout the summer? What do you see taking place with that situation, Israel, Iran? How is this going to end in your estimation?
I feel Sam, like it could go one of two ways. You know, one way is Iran folds and they make a deal and they get to keep their regime and we back out of it. I think that's one possible scenario. The other scenario is they force our hand. They don't make a deal and we're forced to go in there because we can't allow them to continue attacking Israel. You know, they were so close to making a nuke and they're just going to go at it again. We've been in this battle for decades with them getting close to making a nuke, and then we get on the back off and they go back at it again and again and again. You know, this regime needs to be gone. They need to go. We need to get someone else in there, and that's going to involve us. Israel can't do it by themselves. We have to get in there. Unfortunately, I know we have this fatigue from the Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 25 years. But unfortunately, Iran is a much bigger threat than they ever were. And this is a much bigger threat to our country. And we need to take care of it. And we need to do it very quickly, because the longer this drags on, the more Iran can set up to do more damage to our country.
All right. And Sam, I suspect you said as much initially, just pretty much what Drew said.
I don't see it going any other way than Trump putting maximum pressure on Iran to totally surrender. Because once you get on Trump's bad side, I mean, he can be forgiving and give people second chances. But once you start murdering women and children with your ICBMs, and let's talk about the strategy. So Israel targeted the nuclear facilities, targeted the communications, targeted the anti-aircraft and the radar, targeted basically strategic military targets and nuclear targets. Iran's strategy was to lob missiles into populated areas, killing women and children, and try to create public pressure against Israel's leaders to stop the bombing campaign. Completely different strategies. Now, when you look at a guy like Trump, Wharton Business School grad, former president, now president again, he's not impressed with people that like to use their bombs to kill women and children. He doesn't show it, but I guarantee you that infuriates him because he doesn't like senseless loss of life. That is one thing you can take to the bank about Donald Trump. He doesn't like young people being disfigured and blown to smithereens. And no Christian man would. And no decent human being would like that. And so I think he's had it. I think they pushed Trump too far. And I think when he said this afternoon, total surrender, I think he meant it. Now, it might be a negotiating technique. I don't know, but I doubt it. He's got carrier battle groups getting in a position. He's got B-2s and B-52s over there ready to go. And I think they're going to see the stiff end of some mops. And that's a 30,000-pound bomb that's dropped from over 40,000 feet and hits at like Mach 2 point whatever, depending on how deep they want to penetrate. And it is just absolutely a devastating weapon. And that's the weapon that can and will, I believe, completely destroy Iran's nuclear aspirations.
We've never used those in war anywhere, have we?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I can't say we've never used them, but I don't know of any situation where we've used a mop.
Okay.
And they were made specifically for Iran and the threat that Iran posed. The only other country that really spends a ton of money building things underground are the Chinese. You know, so might they be useful in a conflict with China? They might be, but we need to stay out of a conflict with China. We don't need to be taking China on.
I'm in 100%.
But, you know, as negative as this conversation, as hard as this is to talk about.
It's extremely divisive, by the way, among conservatives and in the population in general.
And it should be. Remember the America that existed before COVID, where we actually had legit debates between intelligent men? Remember those days?
Yes, I do. And I long for those days.
Well, but, here we are.
Well, we're having this conversation. But a lot of... And here's... Look, I understand... And I could certainly talk with people like Charlie Kirk and others who are saying, we got to stay out of this. And haven't we learned our lessons? But Drew, you made a point. I mean, both of you made points that this is, we're talking about different scenarios here with different, totally different outcomes. This is not 1979. This is a lot worse.
Well, I think Drew said it best. Iran is 100 times the threat that Iraq or Afghanistan ever was to the United States. I mean, that was, to me, that's the statement of the show right there. And that's the truth. And that's why we better be very careful ignoring a country that has the potential to develop these kinds of weapons, has the skill technology-wise that the Iranian men do, and has a government that has pledged to kill us and wipe us off the face of the earth. I don't think that's something you can ignore.
And to that extent, I want to go back to something that Drew said. And Drew, I'll ask you this question.
Sure.
So here we are. And let's just say President Trump says, all right, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to take care of business. You know, TCB, I'm going to do this and does what Sam was talking about, dropping a few of these presidents at various locations. Drew, what's our threat assessment here domestically when that happens? Because I've got to believe that you've got terror cells here in the U.S. that are kind of sitting by the red phone, metaphorically, obviously. What is your assessment? Will there be a domestic blowback, some sort of asymmetrical response? I mean, I know that might be speculation, total speculation on your part, but given your experience, got to ask, what do you think? I mean, are we in danger here domestically?
I would say it's definitely speculation, but you always want to prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Right.
You know, I think it depends a lot on how quickly we can take out their leadership, because obviously a lot of that stuff will trickle down from their leadership to give orders to the terror cells. There are absolutely terror cells here in the United States. That's a fact. You can catch the FBI telling us that on several occasions, especially with all the open borders we've had over the last, you know, 4 years of Biden. I'm sure we have a lot more than we know of currently. But yes, so you could probably expect some blowback, but it all depends on, I think, how we take care of the situation and how quickly we can resolve it. The quicker we can resolve and get a new regime in Iran, I think the safer we're going to be.
Okay. I'm looking for a better reason for the last 4 years, or the Biden regime 4 years, of letting people in without vetting and you know, Chinese military age males. I'm looking for a better explanation. And this is what comes to mind. These times, the times we're in right now, where they could have pre-positioned assets here in the U.S. For immediate payback. I'm just saying, that's kind of what I feel based on my research and my analysis. Not a military guy. I'm just looking at that because I really cannot. How can you justify throwing open your back door, your front door, all doors, and letting whoever in? And what would be the most compelling reason for that? And I see this where we're at today.
I don't know if you've had time to look, but the FBI announced this afternoon that the Chinese interfered with the 2020 presidential election.
I saw that, yeah.
They had a number of operatives, fake driver's license, social security cards, getting Chinese operatives to vote. And before Biden took office as president, there were over 247,000 known Chinese spies in the continental United States. Since Biden opened the borders, we estimate that number to be over 400,000. And when you look at the FBI now talking about Chinese operations to bolster Biden's chances of winning in 2020 and all of the voter fraud that China was involved in, I mean, it was over 20,000 people with driver's license and instructed to vote for Biden. Now, when you're winning a state by 5,000 votes and the Electoral College vote swing on 5,000 vote swing in a given state, you throw 20, 30, 40, 50,000 Chinese in that aren't citizens that are now casting votes, that can completely swing a presidential election. And so the FBI has just now gotten permission to kind of talk about this stuff. And keep in mind, Kash Patel found the previous FBI director's secret room where they stashed all of this stuff they used to manipulate people and to hide evidence that that incriminated the Biden administration, all this other stuff. I'm sure you're aware of that. So,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, this stuff is just beginning to come out. And the way that the Biden administration endangered all Americans is unforgivable. It's treason. And the man should be hung with cheap Chinese rope because his life isn't worth a bullet out of my 9 mil.
Well, he'll be gone soon. So,
yeah, amazing, amazing. You know, there will be some of that, but.
Yeah, but you've got such infiltration by the Chinese Communist Party in this country. You've got minions of the CCP in Tim Walz. I mean, for crying out loud, his ties to Communist China and so many others. It's hard to even fathom how we can allow this as a population to exist in this country. And like you said, hey, the FBI, good morning, hello, here we are, identifying all of this. But exposure is one thing. What the hell are we going to do about it? That's my question.
The big, beautiful bill. You know, you want to talk about conflicted conservatives, right?
Oh,
Rand Paul is probably the biggest opponent to the big, beautiful bill out there. And I have been a Rand Paul fan my whole life. That guy is sometimes been the only one in Washington, D.C. that would stand up for the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
So let me say that about Rand Paul up front. But Rand Paul is so wrong about this big, beautiful bill thing, because if we don't start funding ICE at a different level and we don't start funding some of this, the resources we need to deal with these threats, we're in big trouble. And so Rand Paul needs to bite the bullet, let some tariff money come in, and understand that the deficit will be dealt with a little bit at a time, not in 1 year. And there's a number of people that need to understand that. And I'll remind you of what General Bradley used to say: amateur study tactics, professional study logistics. So if we were purely a tactician, we would cut the budget in half, cut taxes, spur the economy, and make sure that we never add to the deficit again. But logistically, that's impossible, because the threats we face have been developed over 50 years, and the budget it's going to take to deal with those threats has got to happen now, or we're in big trouble. And that's what Trump knows, and the average American doesn't know. Not Elon Musk, not Rand Paul. And I appreciate and love Rand Paul for his stance in supporting the truth, in supporting the Bill of Rights, and supporting the Constitution. I love the man. But in this particular case, the threats are so significant that if we don't fund the mechanisms that deal with these threats effectively, we are in big, big trouble. And the other side of that coin is the opportunities are enormous. And it's a gamble what Trump's doing with the tariffs, with the economy, with the funding of DOD. It's a huge gamble. But you know what? God hates cowards.
But I don't think it's that much of a gamble in terms of the tariffs, gentlemen, because of our history. Prior to 1913, we existed on tariffs,
McKinley, essentially. You know what I loved when people talk about, Democrats talk about raising taxes? You know, I always remind them, you know, tax before 1910. How did we build our roads, schools, and government buildings? How did that happen? No. And, you know, they don't even know the answer.
Which is sad, but not surprising, obviously. Okay.
Back to the genius of McKinley, right? That's how it happened. People like that.
Right. Yes, yes. Absolutely. And this is a hard, difficult discussion to have on multiple levels. You're talking about really an unenviable position that we find ourselves in today, and one that is so divisive. on many different levels, many different topics, from Israel to the big, beautiful bill to all of this. I mean, it's all coming to get converging all at once here. And here we are. So to have a conversation like this in depth, we have folks, we've got an expert right now, a nuclear biological expert from the Army, hazmat guy. Okay, we've got a military expert, Sam. This, to have a discussion like this, in my view, very few platforms have this discussion at this level with this talent. So I just want to extend my thanks to both of you as we continue this discussion. Drew, I feel like we've kind of haven't really tapped into your full message today. What do we need to know? What's your message? If you could sit down and talk with, oh, I don't know, the president or anybody that, well, what's your message to people and to people in power today?
I think, you know, obviously the people in power, my message to them is do what's best for our country. You know, they are the leaders of the United States. They should be doing what is best for us. Now, in my current opinion, I do believe that is taking care of the current regime in Iran. But also, okay, for the people of the United States, you have to do what's best for you. You have to be prepared. You know, that includes maybe if you have a basement, making that safe room to help mitigate that radiation in case a dirty bomb does go off. Have the equipment necessary so you're able to move after a few days, get to a clean area. Make sure you've got food, clean food and water stored in that safe area. You know, that is how you're going to get through it. If you're in a major city that hits with a blast, you know, consider yourself lucky that you'll feel no pain. But for those of us...
That's pretty hard. Wow. Okay, but it's true.
Yeah, you know. The last thing you want to go through is radiation poisoning. Yeah. You're looking at organ failure, multiple organ failure all at the same time. It's a miserable way to go.
Right.
It is one of the worst ways to die. You do not want to go through that. So you either want to go fast or you want to be prepared and be able to get out of it with minimal damage. So what I mentioned earlier, take it very seriously. It's better to be prepared and not need it than to not be prepared and end up needing it. So
what happened to our fallout shelters? You know, the civil defense, the old civil defense places to go in the event of, you know, the big attack. Of course, that I'm sure that predates you, but
a lot of them are still operational. People don't know where they are, though. They haven't looked it up. There's a lot of shelters. There's shelters in my town right here, but half the people here don't even know they exist.
Where the CD signs, you know, on at the black lettering over the yellow triangles. I mean, I haven't seen those in a while. So, but you're telling me that they still exist?
A lot of them do.
Oh, okay.
But the culture has stopped focusing on it.
Huh.
Do you remember, I don't know if you remember this, Doug, but when I was a young kid in grade school, early 60s, they used to march us into the hall as a nuclear attack drill and a tornado drill. They called it different things at different times. But they tell you to put your back up against the wall and open your knees and stick your head between your knees and cover your head with your hands, right? All that garbage. Yeah.
I remember
and,
that.
And in second grade, we were joking, stick your head between your knees and kiss your goodbye.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it was a joke we made as second graders. But the truth is, there are shelters around, and there are caves around. And there, you know, we have this huge cave in Missouri called Merrimack Caverns. I mean, it's enormous. It could hold 30,000 people. It's so big. It goes on for miles. And And I can't imagine how full Merrimack Caverns would be if there's ever the threat of a nuclear event in Missouri. But, you know, there are caves around. Hey, and if you're in the city, I want people to know there are people that were in underground parking garages in Nagasaki that lived and had children and grandchildren when the bomb went off.
There was actually a documentary that I saw that had one of the survivors, exactly like you said. He was in a reinforced structure, but he was very, very close to the blast. And I think he stayed there for like a week or two. I don't recall the specifics, but I do know he survived and was the subject of a documentary, I think maybe 20 years ago. Something like that.
So if you are in the city and you have access to buildings that go deep underground, well, that's the place to be.
Okay. So Drew, we've got to tap into your knowledge here some more. So, okay. Something happens in the nuclear realm. We haven't talked about the biological things either. Is there anything to worry about with respect to biological weapons here in the U.S., do you think?
There's certainly a concern. I wouldn't put it as high as a nuclear threat. There's always a worry that your water system can get contaminated. You know, they can take over a water plant and put whatever agent they want in the water to disperse
it. Like fluoride. I'm joking, but okay.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
No.
Certainly it's a threat.
Okay. So if you were to create a threat list, nuclear radiation would be at the top, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then the rest would fall. Okay. So now, given that scenario, some of the most basic things, like you said, if you have a basement, hey, throw some stuff down there, some supplies down there. What kind of food, just as an example, long-term storable food or canned goods? And can canned goods be contaminated? I mean, I was thinking about the Twilight Zone episode that I watched. I mean, talk to us about that. What's the best?
Well, sure. The food that's, if it's close to radiation or out in the open, it can absolutely be contaminated. But that's the whole purpose that you have it in your safe area, your basement, as far away from the radiation as possible. You want to keep it in the safest spot in your home that you possibly can. That way you minimize the radiation it's subjected to.
Okay. Now I'm thinking I have a basement. I've got a room in my basement. I guess I can call it my laundry room. And if I want to make that a safe space per your standards, tell me what I need to do again, or in addition to what you already said.
The most material that you can put around the lining of the room as possible is going to help you more. If you can put a 1/2-inch steel plate around every wall and ceiling in that room, that's going to help mitigate more radiation than just the drywall and the wood and the insulation.
And of course, no windows. I mean, you would cover. Yeah.
So for instance, I have a walkout basement.
Okay.
If I were to make a safe room in my house, it would not be toward the walkout portion of the basement, because that's open to more. It's open to air. I can just walk out of my basement at the back of my house. My safe room would be at the very front of my house, where it's fully underground, surrounded by concrete, and I would put extra material in the wall facing the back of the house, because that's where you're going to be subject to more radiation, and from the top, right? The top and toward the back of the house is going to be, those facing walls are going to be the most open areas where radiation can come in. Now, the facing front wall and the side walls, they're covered by like 9 feet of earth. You know, you're not really going to get radiation from those directions. So just keep in mind of where the open air is coming from. I mean, that's going to be where the radiation will come from. So
what about ventilation? I mean, hey, you're going to need some air, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's how much money do you want to pour into this? You're going to need a filter, just like for your mask. You have a HEPA filter. You can get a HEPA filter for your house and a HEPA filter for your room, for the room that you're going to make a safe room in.
And they make CBRN rated HEPA filters.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about protecting yourself from radiation or nuclear energy, you need a CBRN rated HEPA filter. And, you know, you can. So let's talk about this type of shielding technology, because we do it all the time in America. Our X-ray rooms. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the guy that goes behind the wall and says, hold still. And then he ducks behind the wall and turns the X-ray machine on.
Oh, yeah.
That's gamma radiation, is it not, Drew?
It is. That's gamma radiation. And that's why you wear the lead vest, because the lead protects you from gamma rays.
Yeah, so you can put steel, concrete, steel, lead liners on the outside, and you don't have to spend, you know, $80,000 to build. If you've got a basement, you can do it pretty cost effective if you're smart about the materials. But when you start adding fans and HEPA filters that are CBRN rated, you know, just the filter system is going to be an additional $3,000.
Ouch.
But keep in mind, we do this kind of stuff. And you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, I have students that come here to the Freedom Center to train, and they don't have money to buy the latest weapons technology. They don't have the money to buy ammo to train and practice with. They don't have the money to buy a chest rig with a level 3 or level 4 plate in the front and the back. And when Omar Bradley, General Bradley, said amateur study tactics, professional study logistics, I hate to say this, but your personal logistical capabilities, think financial capabilities in this example, oftentimes determine who's going to live and who dies in these situations. And so if you don't have some resources to get some freeze-dried food, some resources to buy a gas mask with a CBRN filter, think $350, you know, some resources to shield your food and your suit in case you have to leave, and you have an event in your area, you might not make it. And this is the reality of it. And it shouldn't be that way, right?
No,
all God's children are equal. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the truth.
Yeah, but then again, didn't we at one point depend upon the civil defense system to take care of things like that? To a larger extent than today. But again, here we are.
Our civil defense system ensured that there would be about 7% of the population survive.
Wow.
If we had a global nuclear conflict, about 7% would make it. It wouldn't wipe society out, but it would wipe out 90% plus.
Okay.
And so, you know, the hardest thing about war and about conflicts is not everybody makes it. And wow. People that are shrewd and the people that have resources, they have a better chance. That's just the truth.
Well, I got to tell you, gentlemen, and Drew especially, I mean, you were in the mire and muck with all of this. I'll tell you what, if I'm close to an airburst or a nuclear event, I want that puppy to drop right on my head, man, I'm telling you. Because, you know, I don't want to be on the periphery of something like that where I'm dosed and then I have to die a slow death. But the alternative, what you're saying, and for those who are interested, Drew, for the sake of transparency, do you have any financial interest in the website myrosafety.com? Is that your?
No, I don't. Okay. I was just looking around when I learned that I would be on the show. I was looking around for an option for people that was legit, and I did my research, and they're a very legit website. They make good equipment. All the reviews are very good. There's not a whole lot out there, you know, and they were one of the main ones that I could find, and all their stuff is rated to the highest ratings you can find for that kind of equipment.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well, you know, we haven't talked at all about things like potassium iodide, and there's other little things that you can do that can mitigate the damage to exposure.
And if you want to spend a quick minute on that, I mean, I've got potassium iodide tablets. I've got the cards that measure the radiation. They were only a few bucks. I mean, it wasn't that much money. So go ahead. I mean, the little things that we can do. The nuke detectors, for example, whatever you call them.
Go ahead, Drew.
They're just little radiation detectors. You just want to verify that they can detect the three different types of radiation, the alpha, beta, and gamma. Okay. But they're all over the place.
Okay. All right.
And the other thing, let's talk about gas masks. So when you buy a gas mask and you have to buy some CBRN rated filters, make sure that if you're not sure what size your face is, buy the smaller mask. Because I think Drew would probably tell you this. You can do a hot change on a filter if you put positive pressure with your lungs when you're changing the filter. You can't have that mask leak.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, Drew.
Very, very correct. You'd rather be a size small than a size big. It'll find a way into the mask if it's too big.
And make sure you have a mask for everyone in your family. Got to ask you this, as crazy as this question might be, are there masks for dogs?
It wouldn't surprise me. I have never looked that up.
Our special operations actually have masks for their dogs.
I mean, I would imagine, given the fact that they're service animals, but is that what I'm seeing on the screen?
Yeah, but if it's your dog, would probably have to be a Malinois-sized dog. You know, back to not, it's just not fair. My wife's miniature Russian long-haired dachshund doesn't stand a chance. There's no mask for him. Okay. Remy's going down if there's a nuclear event near Lebanon.
Don't tell Remy, because that's not fair. All right. Wow. A lot to learn. So at the end of this program, we only have, we got about a minute left. Optimistic, Sam and Drew, optimistic about where we're at and where we're headed, or more, less optimistic, more pessimistic? And maybe that's an unfair question, but I want to hear 30 seconds from each of you.
Go ahead, Drew.
You know, I tend to be on the more optimistic side. I think you just worry about what you can control, taking care of yourself, taking care of your family. And, you know, you can't control what Trump's going to do. You can't control what Iran's going to do. Just focus on yourself and live your life every day. You just go out and do your thing. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, you're prepared and you can do what's needed.
And Drew, is there, are you in the business, and forgive me because I don't know, but are you in the business to consult or help people if people have questions or not? Or other way, it's fine. I'm just curious.
I can certainly help with any questions in terms of Seaburn related questions or needs.
Okay. And if anyone is interested, can they get a hold of you through the Freedom Center or no?
Yes, they can.
Okay. Sam is shaking his head. Yes. All right. So if anyone has any questions, and again, folks, we're talking about this in real, real stuff. So if you have questions, you can get a hold of Drew by way of the Freedom Center. The links will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. Sam, your final 30 seconds. Or did you go?
As gloomy as parts of this discussion can be, I personally am extremely optimistic. I think the U.S. economy is going to take off. I think Trump's team is doing all the right things. I think that Iran is going to be dealt with. I think we're going to see countries that we